This past week, through really ignorance of history, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer made a comment equating Syrian President Assad's use of chemical weapons against his people a worse act than Hitler, who, Spicer said, never used chemical weapons. The history, quite different. The problem this comment lays before us, how the phrase never again needs to be utilized as a means to prevent that part of history from ever being repeated, rather than the facts of that history from ever being known. My next guest is a best-selling Holocaust history author and award-winning filmmaker whose works teach the people today and honor those who were the victims. His book is Justice at Dachau, The Trials of an American Prosecutor. His film, Hitler's Courts, Betrayal of the Rule of Law in Nazi Germany. Joshua Green, thanks so much for being here today, Joshua.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And his website is justiceatdachau.com. And let me just bring up Spicer's direct comment just for a foundation here. You had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons. So you have to, if you're Russia, ask yourself, is this a country that you and a regime you want to align yourself with? Is, as I said in the introduction, it's really either an ignorance to politics or an ignorance to history or an addiction to politics on Spicer's part. But is this an example, too, of how through an overuse of the word Hitler and Nazi as either an insult or, strangely enough, in some euphemisms, a joke, that a growing ignorance and dismissal, in a way, has developed?
Well, sure. I mean, you put your finger on it. The farther we move away from the reality of history, the greater the risk of seeing the mistakes of the past repeated. And one of the symptoms of that distancing ourselves from reality is when the truth and the facts of history migrate into metaphor and image and example. The Holocaust was not an example of anything else. You know, Hitler was not a metaphor for something else. First of all, the statement was just plain wrong. The Nazis used Zyklon B gas throughout the entire wartime. But secondly, when we talk about the Holocaust, we're talking about something very specific. It was the systematic, state-sponsored, scientifically designed annihilation of Jews and other minorities during the Nazi era. And to raise that to some abstract level of metaphor is dangerous.
I've had this happen a few times. Someone will say, and for the person listening, they know I've been from almost day one a very vocal candidate Trump and President Trump supporter. There's no secret there. And someone will come to me and say, your president's a Nazi. And they'll sit back with a smile on their face. And they're probably expecting me to come back. It's, you know, some loud verbal barrage at them. And I'll say, let's just dissect what you just did. Because you have a problem with an individual who was elected through a free political system of something they've decided to do or have ruled upon, you're equating that person with a person who eliminated 6 million lives and tried to eliminate an entire faith of people. Now, explain the logic of that to me.
I'm afraid there's no logic there at all. People are afraid of what they don't understand. Look, my field is religious studies, okay? So I come from a long line of lefties. So we're not going to get into politics today. But what we do learn from history is, first of all, our impressions of what's happening on the surface are usually wrong. You can't look at the actions of the current administration and claim to know what's going on behind closed doors. And in my own classes, I warn students, be very careful. You know, you may be concerned, you may be upset, you may disagree with what's going on, but you have no right to judge. You know, we are in a democracy, and we have a president who's duly elected, and you can't claim that this was done as a mistake. There are a lot of intelligent people who voted for Donald Trump, and they had good reason for doing so. And I think the connection, if I may here, Chris,
sure,
with Justice at Dachau, is that we had a due process purist leading the prosecution in those trials, and it was his job to make sure that the proceedings against the men and women who operated Hitler's concentration camps were awarded due process, that the trials would be seen as fair, that they were following the rule of law, and that they were not just emotional victor's justice or some other kind of arbitrary stamp of guilt because we wanted to bring perpetrators to justice quickly. So I think cool heads need to prevail in all circumstances.
Let's go back to those times, as you write about in Justice of Doc Howe, because, again, the casual observer who's just coming into maybe a study of this history might think, well, talk about a slam dunk for a prosecution in a court case. That's basically you're going up against the murderer holding the gun and the bloody knife. Was that true, or were there challenges still to, and was part of the effort, too, in those trials to bring out as much as possible to be known and to cement that part of history so that concept of never again would have something to hold, to refer to?
Yeah, that's the right question. It's a really good question. People are aware of the Nuremberg trials. Now, those were an international tribunal, and they were taking place 65 miles to the north of the former Dachau concentration camp. At Dachau, you had thousands of people standing trial for having operated Hitler's concentration camps. Nuremberg was 22 chieftains. Those are people, they never lifted a gun. Where were all the other Nazis, the people who did all the horrible experiments and the tortures and the starvation and the mass murders? Stood trial 65 miles south of Nuremberg at the court of the American Third Army. Now, the purpose of Nuremberg, of course, was very noble, is to establish a new rule of law and show the world that American democracy and the constitutional safeguards work, and that the law can deal even with unprecedented crime. There's still some debate whether those trials were successful at proving that. But Colonel William Denson's challenge at Dachau was somewhat different. There was no way, Chris, that an American tribunal was going to find the men and women who operated concentration camps not guilty of anything. I mean, the outcome was a foregone conclusion here. So what Denson had to do was show that America was capable not only of winning a war, but also leading righteous trials against their enemies and giving them fair due process of law. And he did so, but it came at a great price. He almost died from exposure to the horrors of the camps. 3 years of his work that led almost to his own death. From his body weight dropped from 168 pounds to 116 pounds. He developed a kind of palsy-like trembling in his hands and legs. And you can imagine being exposed to these horrors, all the evidence that he'd seen there for three straight years.
And in many ways, the first one being exposed and having these horrors revealed to him.
It was, there was no Holocaust entry. There was no Schindler's List. There was no library of books. The American GIs, including the officers who led these trials, had no clue what they were getting involved with. You know, they came in, and it was still too early to know the extent and the depth of the depravity that had gone on inside these camps.
So Joshua Green, his book is Justice at Dachau, The Trials of an American Prosecutor, his film Hitler's Courts, Betrayal of the Rule of Law in Nazi Germany. JusticeAtDachau.com is his website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas, and Holocaust Remembrance Day is coming up on Monday, April 24th. And certainly it's a day to inspire us to remember every day throughout the year the truth and the histories versus, well, now that brings up a question, albeit unknowingly. Does what Sean Spicer say empower or fire up the Holocaust deniers in any way?
Well, in all fairness to Mr. Spicer, I mean, he's apologized, he made a mistake. It's not the end of the world. However, I think you raise a challenging question there. Is it symptomatic of a larger problem? And I think, unfortunately, that it is. Not just because people see the Holocaust in the extreme as something fabricated by the Jewish community, all kinds of crazy theories that go down for reasons that we could discuss some other time. But you have to ask yourself, why do thinking people have questions about the Holocaust? In my classes, right, I deal with undergraduates. I love them to death, but, you know, frankly, they've got the attention span of mosquitoes. And, you know, they don't understand anything. And this is the Holocaust is something that happened a million years ago for them, to people who speak in strange foreign languages. And the whole thing is incredible. You know, even survivors, when they talk about it, say, I cannot believe what my eyes have seen. So if even if the survivors are so struck with the incredulity, the enormity of what they saw, it's understandable that people may be somewhat hesitant to accept what went on. And, of course, that was Chief Prosecutor William Denson's problem as well. He went into this and said, I've got to overcome my own disbelief at what I'm seeing here. So, yeah, there's a great responsibility, and I lay a lot of that at the doorstep of educators to make sure that they teach the reality of the Holocaust and not kind of universalize it as being some kind of an example of something else, man's inhumanity to man or mass murder in some kind of generic category.
The unfortunate truth of the human condition, it's easier to dismiss the complicated easily than to try to absorb, understand, and learn the complicated.
Absolutely. I worry that if, let's say, The Diary of Anne Frank, for example, is the only book that young people read about the Holocaust, I worry about what they've understood. And if you have a book on adolescent development, it's a lovely book, but Anne Frank knew nothing about the Holocaust. When the war ends, I'm going to be a writer, she wrote. You know, and in spite of everything, I still believe in the goodness of people. Had Anne Frank survived her time in Auschwitz and then in Bergen-Belsen, where she died, and had written Volume 2 of her diary, that would have been a very important book, because she could have looked back and told us what the reality was and maybe even criticized her first diary.
Joshua Green's book is Justice at Dachau, The Trials of an American Prosecutor, and his film Hitler's Courts, Betrayal of the Rule of Law in Nazi Germany, two strong blocks in the foundation of the facts and the history of this horror that we call the Holocaust. Holocaust Remembrance Day is April 24th, and use it as a day to do serious studies and learn what you can about the facts and the reality, and make it a day that will empower you to remember every day those who survived, those whose lives were lost, and the significance of what never again truly does mean. Justice at Dachau.com. Joshua Green, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Chris.